we may ultimately find ourselves and our societies in a different place. And the reason is because the technologies that we're using to archive, to articulate, and to reach out and touch one another in the variety of ways are not neutral. Everything that we use online, from the technologies to the services that are produced, has an agenda. And how these agendas sit with us are not yet fully understood. The UN has decreed the access to the web is a human right, and we use it like it's a public utility. We've moved away from a material culture, a material world, into a virtual one. And we are now, as some academics might describe us, from the 1990s all the way to the now, we are becoming cybernetic, which is, you know, extending ourselves through the use of this tool. Right? We are moving forward unthinkingly. We're uploading ourselves uncritically. You are creating services that sit on top of a framework that dictates what services that you provide and how your customers consume them. And that, for personal, social, and of course commercial reasons, is something that requires just a moment of reflection. Now, people would unlikely point to the paper that the news is printed on, or the printing press that embedded the text there, as a technology that is anything but neutral. Right? They argue that it's the editors that are the conduits of ideologies. But in fact, in the case of web services from WikiLeaks to Amazon to Google to Facebook, the digital platform itself is suffused with the principles that are decreed by the context in which it's produced. And this is generally overlooked by web consumers. As they search, they buy, they consume, they upload, they connect, and they create content online. But it's also overlooked in the needs of developers and service providers when they need to get stuff out the door. Now, by the nature of the technologies, by the nature of the parameters that they have to hand, the people who develop web solutions, including the systems of the cloud, have to act like psychologists who think that human beings can be measured. And what they have to do is they have to reduce web users into binary ones and zeros in order to fit within the code of the machine. What they choose and how they choose to create the human is a political decision. The internet is the scaffolding upon which the people in charge of the new world build the future. These are the Larry Pages, the Sergey Brins, the Mark Zuckerbergs, to name just three very powerful individuals. And also the creators of RenRen, of Mixty, of Baidu, and the various other technologies that are popular in the East, in China. We are subject to how they construct the human. It's likely that they don't even realize what they're doing. It's likely that they don't even think that they're imposing a kind of ideology about how they view us on the consumers, on their commercial products. But it's still relevant. It's still relevant when you're thinking about how to sell. It's still relevant when you're thinking about who's going to be using and how they will be using it. And I'll give you, this is when I said I was going to give you those examples. So, number one. Facebook's raison d'etre is to be a social playground for web users. Right? It serves two human functions. One, identity self-expression, who am I? And relationship maintenance, who are we and how do we interact? To do this, the technology connects account holders within a circle of interpersonal trust and offers communication options to reinforce those connections. Right? Pretty straight up, that's the function, those are the mechanics, that's how it does it. It exists in an offline context that values identification and verifiability. Right? We are obsessed, if you look at headlines of the press, we are obsessed in this country with anonymity. Is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing? Is it causing, you know, the destruction of society? We also demand verification. So Facebook, one of the reasons I would argue that it's become very popular, as well as, you know, various other things, but Facebook requires its users to create social accountability by creating public or semi-public profiles that link between the online and the offline. Right? That's how they create this notion of interpersonal trust. It then embeds these identities in networks that can confirm or deny an individual's identity by making those connections wide open. Anybody can see them and say, yeah, they know that person. No, they don't know that person. So that's kind of the basic structure. But what is a relationship in Facebook's world? Well, the design architecture that Mark Zuckerberg implemented makes absolutely no distinction between close friends, really intimate people, and distant acquaintances. Somebody that I met in the back of a taxi cab, and you know, we happen to be Facebook whores, and so we share our Facebook information to one another. There's, you know, people out there with 7,000 friends. Nor does it distinguish, though, between links that are made between people in different contexts. So the outcome there is a kind of flattened identity and relationship landscape. This one identity that Zuckerberg believes is the future of social interaction. He's also got a few very well-publicized attitudes about privacy. The status updates, the stream of ambient information that's shared with one's network through the mechanic of the newsfeed that he implemented, despite his users' desires, but then who eventually just took it up and said, yeah, sure, find out what I'm having for breakfast. She says, as an avid tweeter. this is open, this is public, you know, this is endemic, ultimately. The information about the self exists within an opt-out paradigm. So the outcome of this is a social environment in which, as Zuckerberg stated in a speech in 2010, privacy is no longer the social norm. So that's context one.